October 21, 2021, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Give a demonstration. We've got a metronome here which is ticking away at 80 beats to the minute, and you can hear actually, if I hold it up to the microphone, that it actually is quite a steady speed. That's what 80 beats to the minute actually sounds like.
Thank you. Looking again at today's headline stories in California, state and federal officials are inspecting the damage done by levee breaks in the San Joaquin Delta. Charles Manson was denied parole today for the fifth time. And in San Francisco, Mayor Dianne Feinstein announces a new shelter for the homeless. That's California Edition for Wednesday, December 1st. Our technical director is Kim Aubrey, original music composed by Dave Slusser. Funds were provided by the California Council for the Humanities and the California Public Broadcasting Commission. I'm Mara Liasson.
That's the Pedro Show. We started off this edition. Well, happy Thursday, people. John Coltrane, very rare. He played Ascension live, and this was the second time, I think, the next day at the Quartet. It's also called the Blue Valsey. For some reason, it got titled wrong on the bootlegs that came out. This is live at Salle Pleyel, Paris, July 28, 1965. I think the last tour of the classic quartet. And then we had 80. And you could also probably guess that I'm not man alone because there was another voice because those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, David Slusser, once again, welcome aboard, David.
Thank you. Hard to follow Coltrane, man.
Well, you did with a tune called 80. And look, I was thinking of, you know, you sent me a picture this time of you doing the fucking soprano.
That's right.
Okay.
So, you know, Coltrane and the Ascension thing, of course, one of his more difficult works to understand or appreciate, but the quartet thing was another look at it.
Yeah.
Dig it. Very, very cool to
have. It is a trip.
Very cool to have that.
In my music world, it's really key because this is wasn't the quartet version, but the album, you know, which I think in a trippy way he was waving to Ornette, saying, "Yeah, I like what you're doing."
Yeah.
Yeah, in a trippy way. When I look back on it now, at the time I didn't. I was after a gig, I think after a Germs gig, and Raymond played it. Raymond Pettibone. I thought it was like the Germs. I thought he was older, but I didn't know he's dead. I didn't know anything about bebop. I thought he was an older punk rocker because that Ascension was like so wild. And the gig I just saw, and me coming from arena rock, it was just revelation.
Yeah, totally a different thing. A message from a different time and place from outer space. Yes, he waved at Ornette. I bought the album way too early. In my appreciation of Coltrane, and I had to like put it away for a couple of years before I could get it out and listen to it and understand it. But nonetheless, yes, you're right on with the group Freedom and everything. It's, you know, what a contribution.
You know, well, he was like that, you know. It wasn't like, oh, here comes competition. It's like, no, here comes some other ideas, you know, like with John Gilmore and Pharoah Sanders. And Albert Eiler and all these guys. I remember I got this interview. He's talking to this guy in Holland. You know, oh, Mr. John Coltrane, who's your favorite tenor player? He says all of them.
Good answer.
Like the guy, yeah, like the guy who's just starting to learn.
No, that's the right answer.
I know. It's just beautiful. Look, it's been 4 or 5 months since you've been on the show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What's happened?
It was music in the cave. And I play outside once or twice a week with some other old friends, you know, trying to keep it alive. And we did it last week. It's October. We're outside in Northern California. But it was a nice day, and we got down.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about this 82.
Well, that was from a sound design concept album that came out on Zodiac, which was John Zorn's label, still is. And that was based upon 80 beats per minute. And back, that was in the 90s, and like beat music, electronic dance music, and rap were starting to just totally go to these beat-oriented things. So my take, my creative collage take on it was to say, okay, I'll take this standard disco hip-hop beat rhythm, and I'll build the whole piece with that as a click track in the background. You didn't hear it, but everything that happens in that piece happened at a pulse of 80 beats per minute. So I started it with a BBC announcer demonstrating the click track, and which was like electronic metronome, and then I just subverted the metronome into an electronic pulsation and built on it from there, and added all kinds of stuff. And because it was 80 beats per minute, I got a friend of mine that was in a band called MX80.
Yeah,
out of Bloomington. So I got Dale Sofia, the bass player for that band, to lay down this, come in the middle of it and lay down this, you know, really super grungy bass part that eats up most of the frequency. and then I took it out it ends going off into a theme for California Public Radio, which I had a time where I was trying to be a composer, of, you know, jingles and popular music.
I think they call them bumpers.
Bumpers, yeah, it was that. It was a bumper from
a synthesizer young man from Pittsburgh named Tom Feck. He's Black Moth Super Rainbow is one of his bands. But he told me that's what got him into electronic music was them bumpers.
No way, yeah, it's true. That's a whole other world that is incestuous, and yeah, everybody's trying to imitate each other and trying to do their own take on the bumper. You know, so that was my take on the bumper.
Okay.
And there was actually, famous NPR correspondent Mara Liasson in there at the very end doing the news of the day, which was that Mayor Dianne Feinstein of San Francisco was doing something. And then Charles Manson's parole was denied for like the 20th time. You know, so just, slice of verite, actuality. Field recording mixed in with the electronic music. That was, that was still part of my bag.
Right, right. You know, so you said in the time since we last talked, you started playing again in the chilly air. But what about in the cave there as far as were you trading files?
A little bit of that, and that's fun to an extent, but there's also this thing, I don't know if some of the other musicians across the country that you talk to have done playing online on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm doing that because my cave is like a studio.
Sure.
And that's the perfect thing for internet playing, because you got the headphones and you got all the synthesizers hooked up to your mixer, and that's all plugged into your computer. So you just flip a switch and boom, your studio is now in the jam session with these other people who might just be playing like a, flute or a guitar or something. And I'm there with my turbocharged studio.
Right, right. Now, did you work out some strategies to deal with the latency thing?
Well, yes. You have to do it with an Ethernet cable. So you're not using Wi-Fi.
Sure.
That's the big deal. And then, cause one of my daughters was working from home, we upgraded our internet speed on our line during the pandemic.
Yes.
So I mean, if you're at a faster speed and you've got the Ethernet and, you're on a platform where you can adjust for, the best or for the least latency, it's not bad. It's like playing. The amount of latency that you get is like playing with someone that's on the other side of a stage.
Okay.
That's all the delay there is when you really have it working. So you can play with people in semi-real time.
Yeah, I thought there'd be like other strategies like, you don't ever try to like, do a Jim Brown thing where you got three guys on the trap playing identical parts.
Yeah.
Might hear a little flap. So you
should not do that.
You figure in like fudgy spaces where it's not so close, so it's not so perceptible, that latency problem.
Oh, yeah. Ambient music, no problem.
Yeah,
man,
right,
that's just like, if you want to play something trippy, it's go, baby.
So it's like people supplying layers, right?
Yeah, some do. And if you get into a session like that, it's just total really fun. But I've also played bebop with some people under the right conditions.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then you have to stay on top of the beat. Actually,
right.
you have to push the beat.
Kind of ahead of it, right? Because you're almost premeditated, yeah.
And give it up to the drummer. Whatever the drum's doing, he's right. He's right.
He is right.
Nobody else
you
is right.
You are correct, sir. David, you gave me this music, Delight at the End of the Tunnel.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Well, that is, This is pure sound composition. And I was going to have another piece in there for Halloween, which I guess is
coming up
this time of year.
Yep.
And, but instead I put this one on because it's actually a better piece, and it's a collection of sound files and, that I did like on an editing bench. If you were an old fashioned editor, film editor, you have all these film clips hanging around and you can actually crossfade between them. So this is like taking favorite pieces of sound from my collection and telling a little story in sound with just sound effects and not music.
Ah. Or the sound effects become a kind of music.
Exactly.
Okay, let's listen.
Can I hear you, please?
It's fruitless.
So it's gonna be 378.
Mexico, liquid sticks to your neck, climb another wall, over the mountain, breathe in, force of experience, forcing you to breathe, and climb.
Can't believe you're pregnant again. know you've been without him. But he says you was hot, and you're running around with Junior. And Junior brags a lot. Yeah, you're trying to get your claws in me. You do whatever it takes. You're wanting big cash monies for me to pay for your mistake. I can't believe you're pregnant again. I ain't the one that done it. You got the wrong damn man. Costing me a fortune. Paying for your sins. I can't believe you're pregnant again. I can't believe you're pregnant again. Dancing all them holes and close them shameless legs and get some Jesus in your life. This has been a public service announcement from Guitar Troubadours. What wants woman to be happy, healthy, and fulfilled? Optimize yourself, ladies.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show, that chunk of music, David Slusser, started out with Delight at the End of the Tunnel. Then brand new from Guided by Voices, Spanish Coin, SLWCCY, collab I got with Sam Lock Ward, and Iowa City. Got a bucket, or got a, maybe it's a, yeah, it's not an interrogative, it's a declarative. Got a bucket. Chris Kroger out of, where did he move to? Belmont, Texas. Pregnant Again. That's a cover, right? Wild Henson. And then finally, Rubber City. And something live. A cover of 8 Miles High. Which I heard, I read somewhere, something about that tune was inspired by John Coltrane. Maybe the solo or something?
If the Byrds recording.
Yeah, yeah.
They, Roger McGuinn on his 12-string guitar actually quotes India over the opening over the opening vamp of 8 Miles High, or it's his solo, one of the two. Yeah, precisely.
Okay. And I know Robbie Krieger said something about Light My Fire, him too. You know, because 67, right? This is when we lose.
Yeah.
Mr. Coltrane, and I can imagine. I saw an interview with Jimi Hendrix where he said about Mitch Mitchell, that's my Elvin Jones.
Exactly. Oh, I love those. I love those guys. I love Mitch Mitchell. Oh my God.
Oh yeah, incredible. So tell me about this. I remember we talked a little about Rubber City.
Yeah, that was a group with Ralph Carney,
right? Right. Akron.
And Ralph and I grew up in Akron, about a mile apart from each other. I'm a little older, so we weren't in school together at the same time. But right when he got out of high school, and right when I got out of college, we started playing together for a year and a half or so in Akron. Both of us just still learning the repertoire, but it was kind of like a free jazz thing because that was probably mid-70s, early 70s. And, you know, free jazz was very much on everybody's mind, and you know, especially for two aspiring saxophonists. So we hit it off in Akron, and then later Ralph moved out to Oakland, where I live, which is the San Francisco Bay Area, and we re-established our relationship and playing relationship and formed this band, which was bass, drums, and two saxes. And just tried to cover, we would play rock tunes, we'd play jazz tunes, original tunes, but mostly improvising, because Ralph just made music out of thin air all the time. And so the two of us doing that with our quartet, all four of us just making music out of thin air, but then we would throw in something that somebody knew and suddenly it would be 8 Miles High.
Right. Wow, which is kind of what beboppers did, right? They take trad tunes and turn them inside chim chim cheree.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Or even Favorite Things, right? That's a silly little fucking waltz. And he
perfect.
Yeah,
perfect example of that. It doesn't, you know, there's no such thing as a small tune.
No,
you
know, no,
just small musicians.
Yeah, small imaginations.
Right. That's it.
Lack of even entertaining the idea of possibilities, right? Keeping everything confined.
Yeah, well, the great musicians can see the possibilities in the simplest of materials.
Right.
And they, like Mr. Coltrane, just take the one idea and show you what you can do with it.
Mr. Bartok, I heard, got some inspiration for his stuff by going into villages and hearing some folk stuff.
Yeah, that was fortunate because he did a lot of musicians a favor. So many jazz musicians dig Bartok for that reason, and it really enriched classical music because they were going off in Bartok's time into more theoretical, you know, serialism and things, and Bartok understood those forms, but he said no, there's plenty back there in the roots.
Yeah, right.
And he was right.
Right, if you get peripheral vision is really peripheral vision.
Yeah,
you got to look back, sideways, forward, up, down.
Yeah, and the folk music doesn't have that prejudice about academia. It's just, it accepts, folk music accepts so much other sound, you know, incorporate.
Absolutely. There's a story in it, right?
Yeah, so whatever you got.
Yeah, bring, tell, feel, cry, laugh. I love it. We're at the end of the first hour, October 21, 2021, and just Watt Peters, our special guest, David Slusser. Hold tight for hour two. October 21, 2021, second hour of the Watt Peters Show.
Probably. Duke Ellington.
Watch for Pedro Show. Start off the second hour. Stray Horns with Cold Duck for Cootie. I think at the end of the piece, it might be you explaining it's Jim Brown and Duke Ellington.
Yes. Yeah. James Brown. Yeah, well, you know, Jim Brown's the football player. I was originally from the Cleveland area.
Actually,
so.
An actor, too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And then Stoke Carter Project, Prima Storia. Time Slippage Hearing from Love Bounded by Water. And then again, the Stray Horns, live. Reincarnation of a Lovebird. So you got to hit me to Stray Horns. Billy, the songwriter?
Yes.
Okay.
I made a joke out of his name, but Billy Strayhorn was Duke Ellington's kind of silent writing partner.
Sure.
And collaborated. He was a homosexual, so he had to be like, you know, under the radar back in the 30s and 40s, but Duke didn't care and
sure.
Cultivated him and gave him, you know, work and publishing and lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was a genius writer. So the Stray Horns are named after him, but I say Stray Horns because it's five horns, bass, and drums.
Whoa.
So I'm trying to take it's like reduction. So you take a score and for a big band and see how just five horns can kind of be so versatile that they get all the parts. It's also my revenge against piano players that take up all the air.
Yeah.
You know,
Miles said that in his book too. They said why he couldn't stand Red Garland, but he kept him in the band. He said he's really like Ahmed Jamal, right? Because he was Econo, let the tune breathe.
Yeah, and so, you know, but horn players themselves can imply all those harmonies and colors if, you know, if they someone arranges it. And
right,
then,
right, because they're monophonic, so they need somebody to organize that kind of harmony.
Yeah, so that was my study in organizing that kind of harmony, but also giving the horn players the power to be the band, and be the harmonic material, and we don't need a piano player with 10 fingers. We get all the harmonies out with just five notes.
Well, if you think about the swing bands, they put the piano guy in the rhythm section and all doing eighth notes with the guitar, bass, and drums. Right? Bang, 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 bang. Because the horns were so loud. It's interesting.
It's true. True. But, different technology.
Yeah, well, in a different scene, right? You had hundreds of people dancing. You had to get over the foot stomping. So Stray Horns, who's on the bass there?
That would be Joe McKinley, who is a Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area player that I've known for, gosh, I started playing with him around 1980, you know, just doing jazz casuals. He's a great player. You know, and Sun Ra came to town around then and wanted Joe to be in the band.
Whoa.
And wanted him to join the commune, but Joe has a white wife, and Sun Ra didn't want him to bring his wife along. You know, Sun Ra had his own scene. So Joe
But Joe had a bass man, right, Mr. Boykin? He wrote a lot of his songs.
Oh, I love Ronnie Boykins.
In fact, Tiny Pyramids, I covered that with Bucky. Beautiful tune, man.
Yep. Well, the Stray Horns do a whole set of Sun Ra tunes. Because it's the same idea, and Sun Ra came out of the Duke Ellington lineage of color and harmony.
Also, there was a cat, because I read the John Swed book, and Fletcher Henderson, an R&B guy, right, in Chicago?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
I have the book, too. It has a green cover. I love it.
Space is the place.
Space is the place. It certainly is.
And you gave me this here. Now, this is just David Slusser, Ethnologic. Let's listen.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show, that chunk of music. David Slusser, Ethnologic, started it off. Then Headboggle, he got a new album. And this is Sneaky Polyphonics. Finally, some more Rubber City, Migrants. So, Ethnic Logic.
Yes, that's a nod to, you know, people that to this day do things in their bedroom, you know, all by themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, now a young woman or a young man can be at the top of the pop charts with something that they did in their bedroom
yeah.
or in their little home studio. So this is me back, gosh, I did that on a four-channel quarter-inch tape recorder with, you know, overdubbing. Just me. And that was in the early, probably not early 80s, trying to do that piece by myself. But it's also a rhythmic puzzle. Where the beat is 1, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It follows that beat cycle. That's 15 notes, but 15 can be divided by 3, and 15 can be divided by 5.
So
I took one pathway in 5, one pathway in 3, and I have them kind of overlaying each other. And then because of the five factor, I used a pentatonic a scale system. And, you know, it's a very complex piece. You know, I was nerding out. That was my attempt at.
David, let me ask you, what went first?
The Casio.
Okay.
A little Casio VL tone going tick, 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 the little rhythm box.
Right.
And then I think guitar just doing 1-1-2-3, 1-1-1-2, 1-2-3, 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4-5. So it's this nice little pentatonic cascading thing.
Sure.
Then I brought in the xylophone and the glockenspiel and, you know, kitchen sink.
Alabama sausage whistle.
Yeah, but I also got to play a backwards guitar solo on it, something I always wanted to do. And I literally flipped the tape over, because this is back in the tape days.
Right.
And played along with the rhythm track that was playing backwards, and then you flip that back, and you have this psychedelic, instant psychedelic guitar solo.
Yes, the film people do the same thing to show shit, right?
Yep.
It goes back into the bottle. You know, you dunk it out of the bottle, right? And this other one, this rubber migrants, more stuff with Ralph.
Yes, it is, and that's based on two whole tone scales. There's really only two whole tone scales.
Right.
Which means that everything is a step apart.
A whole step apart.
And for the layman, it's that magic sound, the magic floaty sound, because it has an augmented interval. And I just go back and forth. The two sections of the piece are one whole tone scale, and then the other next section is the opposite whole tone scale. So you go through these floating worlds, and it was supposed to be like migrating. I had just moved from Ohio to California when I wrote that, but I was also thinking about migration all over the world.
Sure.
And now it's a major thing. We have a migration crisis. People are fleeing certain parts of the world, and they will continue to flee because of our climate crisis and all the other crises that are going on. So being a migrant is now a very common thing, and it is maybe the future of humanity. We're all going to be on the move as, you know, our coastlines rise and whatever else the heck happens before we get a handle on it. I don't know if we're going to get a handle on it. We may be doomed, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of scary and stuff. Well, people, not really taking stock in consequence. Actually not taking responsibility.
So that's exactly the music. Right. That's what I'm trying. A lot of music. You try to have the music be about something.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to get people to think.
Yeah. Like a crowbar. I'm using a metaphor here.
Yeah, that describes my music pretty well, though.
To get the hubcap off.
which end of the crowbar do you want?
Yeah. Like one time I was helping the Stooges, and they came at me, and he had the belt off, and I was thinking, just don't use the buckle. And he whooped
not
it right in front. No, he's working the stage. He whooped it right in front of me, but he didn't hit me.
Oh, man.
Protected his bass player. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, October 21, 2021. This is Yishuv Pedro Show special guest, David Slusser. Hold tight, 5-3. October 21, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
Turn the power off in the feel like it? Because the power was here yesterday. Why is it here today? The power is on. The power is on. Who turned that power? The power is on. Here comes the boss. Here comes the boss. He stole the power. Is that what changed him? Of course. Here comes the boss. Here comes the boss. The boss stole the power. Of course, of course, of course. It's on. It's on. Somebody stole the power.
Watch for Pedro show. We start off the third hour. Malcolm Mooney and 10th Planet with Power Is Off. And then Reboot. This is his project where they're reimagining the Gollum. This is part three. I think there's nine parts altogether. Eight parts. And this is Universal Eyes Reboot. Mary Shelley used this story like for her Frankenstein. Her old folk story, the Gollum. Stray Horns again. Purple Gazelle. Some more live stuff. So, did you record all the Stray Horn gigs?
Most of what gigs, I have a recorder running if I can.
Okay. It's pretty good sound.
Thank you. Do it myself. I would love to take them into a studio once we get back into studio situation land. I would take that band into a nice big room with a real engineer.
Yeah, yeah. The playing is tight. Now, Malcolm Mooney, 10th Planet. Now, Malcolm Mooney, earlier in the show today, you brought up your old buddies in MX-80 Sound, and that's the last time I saw MX-80 was Malcolm Mooney was singing for them. And people out there, Malcolm Mooney was the first singer for Can before Damo.
Yes.
And it was great. He was reading from this huge-ass book of Spiel he had, and it was just beautiful. And then Holger played, but no bass. He did little beats with this this German guy doing rap.
Right. Holger Zucke.
Yeah.
It inspired me to do more. I like that piece we played earlier, Ethnologic. That would be like, I would be thinking of Holger when I did that. But Malcolm came out to California in the Oakland area and played with, just tried to get some things going with some of the former members of MX-80 and some of the weirdos out here who would play behind him. He liked, do poetry and some of his old songs.
Yeah.
So I played with him over a number of years in a band called 10th Planet. There's one guy from MX-80 in that,
right,
which would explain why Malcolm would be singing on an MX-80 gig. But Mal is also a visual artist and a poet. And I think he just sent me the Boston, somewhere in Massachusetts, where he's, I think, teaching art or something. He's out playing again. He just sent me a gig notice. So, yeah, he's a great, wonderful, creative guy.
Wonderful guy. And so how did this happen here?
He was in Oakland trying to do gigs, and Mark Weinstein of Amoeba Records, who was one of the later drummers in MX-80,
sure,
did produce it with Miles Boysen, tried to produce an album for Malcolm just to, put out more Malcolm material,
sure, sure,
more of Malcolm's originals. So we actually did a record called Hysterica, and that's what The Power Is Off came from, his album Hysterica. And I'm in there on organ and baritone sax, making a lot of noise. But I love the way Malcolm sings. I mean, he scares you. The power is off. That's going to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
My power was off yesterday.
Buzz it off. Yeah.
Yes.
It's only a matter of time. You gave me one more piece of Rubber City Music you did with Ralph. Something called Perdita.
Oh, yeah. That's from a David Lynch movie.
Okay, let's listen. Thank you.
I get the cherry and oops, yeah, what's up with me? Wait here, bitch. If they wish you, put the French golf in your Jewish self. See you, pal, made with a dream. Say, not be so pal, a while.
Who is going to save the planet, then one and all are more or less under orders to slaughter you. Well, they booby-trapped it. They booby-trapped it very badly. The Roman Catholic Church, somewhere along the line, through watching the dramatizations of people, picked up some little fragments of our story. They make it look like it's continued forward into present time, but the truth of the matter is that the loyal officers were not all killed. ZMU missed. And they were not all killed, not by a long way. Although the civilization was battered, it still had weapons, it still had transport, it still had some semblance of organization, and the loyal officers who were at remote bases, who were airborne at the time, who somehow or another on other planets were not affected, suddenly turned around right after this great catastrophe, and the administrators and renegades which ZMU had brought in were not very effective, and a firefight ensued which put the finishing touches on the Galactic Confederation. The towns that were left and so on were just battered into ruins, where you had the renegades that had been hired and so on, and the administrators that had been loyal to ZMU were still trying to hold out. Within a year, he was under arrest, and within 6 years, the lot had been wiped out. The loyal officer was triumphant. ZMU was put with several of his cohorts in the center of a mountain, which is still on one of these planets, and in a wire cage, which is charged with an eternal battery. He's not likely ever to get out.
Go, go, go.
And
go, go.
The loyal officers looked around. There wasn't anything left. And, of course, nobody could manufacture this or that or the other thing. And what people there were left, they couldn't obtain any supplies, and they couldn't maintain the civilization. And what little was left that wasn't battered to pieces simply went by the boards and vanished from history. There is a base on this planet, and it is so shredded away as to be hardly recognizable. Wherever, then, anybody tries to do anything about this, he's apt to get a flashback. So you mustn't go around talking about being the people who are going to save the planet. You are the people the planet obeys. You are the people who own the planet. You are not the people who are going to save. And thereby you will save it.
Doesn't look, Mr. Lord.
Condition many years ago in studying the subject of Dianetics, Scientology, putting them together, working with it, I thought it might be an awfully good thing to become a member of a police force for a little while to find out what they were scared of. And I did. Became a special officer in the Los Angeles police, as I just mentioned. I wanted to find where these vicious criminals were that were making them so frightened. I had a beat down on South Main Street. They didn't know who I was. I was careful to talk colloquially like I do in lectures. And they were very friendly with me because I was something they could understand. A policeman. But down on South Main Street, amongst the gyps, griffs, and the dopes, the hopheads, the tea eaters, and the rest of them, the lowest strata of humanity that comes across from the lowest strata of Mexico to mingle with the lowest strata of Los Angeles, and boy, that's low. Los Angeles is the only city in the world that deserves psychiatrists.
Oh. Destruction. Destruction. Apollo 13 months.
When a man is afraid, he doesn't perceive. So it almost always happens that that of which one is afraid doesn't exist. Definition. Fear is a state of imperception. Fear is an unwillingness to confront. If one cannot confront, he cannot become aware of. So if one is unwilling to confront, then he doesn't know what he is confronting. And he doesn't see what is in front of him. And he can dream up this mirage called the viciousness of man. He can dream up this big production about the government must be all powerful so as to keep these people in their place. He even goes as far as to make emplacements and wide streets so that populaces petitioning the government with some velocity can be whipped a bit by grape. Do you see that? Those are symptoms of terror. It is true that a mob can be talked to by a man who is afraid and can be talked into believing that there's something awfully bad over there that they have no adding us up and can be momentarily turned in that direction and made to run amok. But I don't notice many sheriffs standing there very long with shotguns to stop them. Occasionally we hear of heroic stands where lynchings have been prevented or some such thing by a lone lawman. But usually, it's been my experience that he was out having a drink while it all went on and the jail was knocked down and the lynching was done. While the riot was in progress, there never could have been less police. Of course, it's usually unfortunate that the police do get there. It's usually unfortunate that they do. In the first place, when they arrested the guy, what have they got him in a cage for? Are men supposed to be kept in cages? Well, evidently police think so. Well, they must be very imperceptive, because if they go down to the zoo and look, they won't find any men in cages down the zoo. And yet they think men should be kept in cages. They think that's what you're supposed to do with men. And I think that's rather dull. I don't think anybody's ever taught them any different. Nobody's ever walked up to him and said, hey, do you know something? You keep wild animals in cages.
Yeah.
And you don't put men in cages. They don't belong in cages. And I bet an awful lot of cops would look at you and say, we don't put men in cages. We put them in jail. I don't know how this would be different, however, since I have never known a criminal to be bettered by being put in jail. And I have known many to be worse. They drop down below, happily, by being put in jail, and their criminal tendencies are then totally in control of them. There is hardly exists such a thing as a one-time prisoner. They're repeaters. That is, in the ranks of criminals. So the society at large could be said to exist in pretty good shape, going its way, doing the best that it can, floundering along into this rut hole and out of that one, helping their fellow man and being helped, except for two or three odd elements in it. One of those elements is the insane. We can do so much about this particular one that there's hardly any use to talk about it. What we lack is facilities. If you were to process people who were insane in the society, you would take them, you would find it was absolutely vital that you sever their immediate connections with the society for a period of time. Because the society is what is bothering them. The society is bothering them. You must keep them unbothered for a little while, and in addition to that, you must keep them in a state where they cannot injure themselves for a while until you can set them up. And then, you must be able to take your own free time about process. Because the span of attention is so instantaneous, so momentary,
that to grip it for 3 or 4 minutes on a brace is rather big. It's rather something. You got an insane person to give you his undivided attention for 30 seconds is not rare, but for him to give you sane attention for about 4 minutes would be practically impossible. And yet an auditor auditing in any other place in a proper institution would discover that he was spending 4 hours of the 5 hours of processing doing nothing but trying to keep the guy quiet so the neighbors wouldn't be bothered. And that doesn't have anything to do with processing at all. You do various things with a criminal. One of the things is to give him some rest. Give him some rest. Give him some food. Let him walk around. Cut him away from the things that are worrying him a little bit. And a great many people with that treatment all by themselves would recover. Others would recover if you simply walked them into exhaustion so they could then sleep. Others would recover if you simply had an area that was very quiet, if they could go and sit down. Quite amazing if you didn't bother them with interviews, didn't bother them with this, that, and the other thing, how many would snap back to battery. Completely apart from any processing. People, for instance, with electric shocks get out of institutions 3 weeks later than people were given electric shocks on average level. In other words, his incarceration is increased by 3 weeks by reason of having been given an electric shock. That's what you read into that figure. In other words, an electric shock deters his getting well. All right. There are other things you can do, tremendous numbers of things you can do. If you had a motionless object floating in the air in some room, the criminal could go in and look at it for a while. You'd find something odd happening. He'd just look at the stillness until he could accept that piece of stillness. By the time he could actually go in that room and stay in that room quietly for a while, he would be well on his way. In other words, there are ways of treating insanity which don't even require an auditor, but require an auditor's careful supervision. An auditor who knows enough not to get as desperate as they are. An auditor who knows that it is exactly the opposite. The insaner they get, quieter and easier you get. Not the more frantic. But this problem is not actually a tremendous problem in the society. It's being sold as one for the benefit of appropriation.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top. First, let me make it very clear, poor people aren't necessarily killers. You're working hard to put food on your family. Just because you happen to be not rich doesn't mean you're willing to kill. You're working hard to put food on your family. Learn to be responsible citizens and learn to have the skills necessary to take advantage of our fantastic opportunistic society.
Mendacity. Mendacity.
We ought to make the pie higher. We ought to make the pie higher. I guess you'd say I'm a good steward of the land. We got a good common sense policy. Now, I'm going to tell you what I really think is going to happen over time. The birds are supposed to suffer, not the hunter.
Mendacity. Mendacity.
Nobody can threaten this country. Nobody can threaten this country. Nobody can threaten this country. You know, let me talk about Al-Qaeda just for a second. I made the statement that we're dismantling senior management, and we are. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Abu Zubaydah, Ramzi Al-Shib, or whatever the guy's name was. Oh, they may be able to bomb a building.
And we're fully committed to working with both sides to bring the level of terror down to an acceptable level for both.
deadly technology.
And, you know, it'll take time to restore chaos.
I can't imagine somebody like Osama bin Laden understanding the joy of Hanukkah.
We cannot let terrorists and rogue nations hold this nation hostile or hold our allies hostile.
Nobody can threaten this country. Nobody can threaten this country.
Mendacity. Mendacity.
Nobody can threaten this country. Nobody can threaten this country.
But that's okay. If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Watt for Pedro Show. Final music for this edition. Rubber City Red. Rubber. Almost said that other name, that new wave band.
That other band.
Yeah, I'm not going to even think about it. Fucking. Right? You know, that it's like 40 years ago. Somehow it's still in my head. Damn them. Or damn me. Perdita, Rubber City. And then LRH, in his own words, my guest on the last episode, Sam Raw. It's like Tao, but with an R. Rao, yeah. Sam Rao, she does these, what you call them, music scapes. Yeah, she did. Featured Mr. L. Ron Hubbard. And then finally, David Slusser, Thug. Interesting tune. Yeah, how far back does that baby go?
That's 2004.
Okay.
And that was a compilation of Bay Area artists that were wanted to make a statement about our war in Iraq.
That's why I was going to mention. It sounded like about those times.
Yeah, and once again, this is musicians doing something with their music besides just playing pretty notes. We put together a compilation to raise money for I think it went to Afghan war veterans or Afghan widows or something. But all the proceeds from the CD went to support Afghan women. But it was really about the war in Iraq. All that stuff. It was an anti-George W. Bush CD that we local Bay Area people got together and said, well, let's, you know, do something with our music besides see how many hits we can get on social media or whatever.
Right.
Whatever it was back then. And a lot of fun. And that's where I used my skill as a sound editor to put all those clips of Bush and Cheney and the late Colin Powell and everybody else talking about weapons of mass destruction.
Yellow cake.
Yellow cake.
I remember. So what do you got going now? Right at the moment. Is there something
at the
fire, right on the stove, cooking?
At the moment, I'm still doing a long-distance file-sharing piece. I'm with a couple of my buddies, a couple of guitar players here in Oakland, Len Patterson and Steve Clark. And I'm also writing some more for the Strayhorns because I'm hoping that by Charles Mingus's 100th birthday, which is next April, the Strayhorns will be able to actually concertize, go out and play some more. So I'm writing Strayhorn arrangements of Charles Mingus's material.
Wow. Yeah, he had his trip with Duke Ellington in a way, but trippier. I shouldn't say trippier, just really strange. Neat. That epitaph thing, I heard it realized, right? Man, his imagination. I would love to hear the Strayhorn take on this. Strayhorns. So when you get that happening, please come back on the show. Well, invite's always open to you, David, anytime.
Well, thank you. You're doing a great service to musicians and people everywhere by, you know, shining a light up the dark crevice of vocal music everywhere. And this is what's happening in the San Francisco Bay Area, at least what we played of mine today.
Yeah. And then, like you were saying, you're going to take the Strayhorns into a studio with an engineer. But yep. You got the playing part, though. That's usually the hardest part. So
yeah.
I can't wait. Can't wait. Thanks so much. And can't wait till you're back on the show, too, David. Thank you so much.
Well, a pleasure, Mike. And keep at it. You're doing a great service, spreading the word.
Okay. Bebo, October 21, 2021, Dishwap Pedro's will keep you powder dry.